Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never, ever duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Monday, January 28, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and you guessed it, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Treats for Chickens, health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics, non-toxic bug relief, treats, organic snacks, and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thank you very much for that sound check in the chat room. Yes, do I have to say it? It is kind of our life explanation. We are on the road again. And so, my goodness, that's and we love it. It's a family affair. We're having a great time. And let me tell you, I don't know if I could be in a more perfect setting right now. Just to give you a little bit of history, me and the family, Caleb and Jen, we headed out, I believe it was on Friday, was it not? And we loaded up the car and last Tuesday, we loaded up the car, we loaded up the Chicken Whisperer Mobile, the 24-foot Coachman camper travel trailer, and we headed over to Columbus, Georgia. My wife had some testing to do there with her students, that was Wednesday and Thursday. Friday morning, we woke up and we headed south down to beautiful Orlando, Florida. The weather couldn't be better. It was 80 degrees there, beautiful sunshine. It was wonderful. Nice breeze. We had a great time. Friday night, hooked up at a beautiful park, the Bill Frederick Park, I believe it is, not too far away from downtown Orlando, and just about 7 miles from the Citrus Bowl there in Orlando. Had a great time. Saturday morning, we woke up. We headed over to the Citrus Bowl. Got there about 8:30. We got into the RV lot and we got to the RV lot there at the Citrus Bowl and got in there, and we were like the 10th trailer there, and we tailgated all day long this past Saturday night for Christmas. We got Caleb some Monster Truck Jam with the Advanced Auto Parts Monster Truck Jam event there at the Citrus Bowl. It was awesome. We had a great time. So we tailgated all day on Saturday. The event didn't start till 7. We met some great other RVers there tailgating for this event. Saw all kinds of people. I mean, you wouldn't believe it. So anyway, we had a great time there. Caleb loved it. He made it all the way to the end, and he wasn't quite sure, even though he knows monster trucks. Seeing them live is a different animal. So about for the first 15 minutes when the initial show started, all 24, 26 trucks went out and circled the inside of the stadium, loud as can be, and he wasn't really expecting it, the fireworks and the big bangs and things. So he hugged Mama's neck for about 15 minutes while the initial part started. But after about 15 minutes, he got into it. He had his headphones on to protect his ears. Mama did too. I was cool. It wasn't that bad because it's an outdoor stadium, at least I considered it. A lot of the kids had them on. And that was a great event. It was a fun time. He had a great time looking at the trucks, and a great family event. So, and then we woke up yesterday morning, started to head home, and you know, got about halfway home, and we're like, you know what? Let's take a little time. Check out the GPS. Let's check out online here while we're riding up the road, see if we can find a place about halfway through. And we passed this place many a times. Oh my gosh, hundreds probably. And we're just outside of Valdosta, Georgia, halfway probably. Maybe a little further than halfway, more back to the Eagles RV Resort. And let me tell you, we're pulled in here on our RV pad, and it is absolutely beautiful. We're right on a lake, and right here under the park where all the RVs are, beautiful, beautiful oak trees, and they are just covered in Spanish moss. And the moss hangs down, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 feet down from the limbs. So it's clear, it's sunny, but I'm sitting in the shade, and it is an absolutely beautiful right now. Okay, little sound breaking up a little bit, but we're on the road. If it gets worse or if it gets bad, let me know in the chat room. I appreciate that because I can have a backup. I don't know, I have like 3 backup systems I can use when we're on the road. And so back to normal now. Thanks, Fam Farm. We appreciate it. So, but we're sitting here, the Eagles Roost RV Resort. It's beautiful. Caleb's had fun playing on the playground. It's a beautiful lake, lots of beautiful oak trees, and just tons of Spanish moss hanging down out of them. Beautiful shade right now, sunny and clear, and it is awesome. I want to send a special shout out to a first time listener in the chat room, Jennifer Sunday Simpson. She is in the chat room right now. She says she's a first time, I think, listener, and I think a first time chicken owner. So let's give a big round of applause. Thank you very much for joining us to Jennifer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we appreciate you joining us, and thank you very much. Hope you enjoy what you hear. Great show lined up for you today. It is Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. It is going to be part two of a two-part series. Now, about 3 weeks ago, we had part one. You can go back to our archive on iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, or maybe the easiest way to do it is right here on BlogTalkRadio.com. You can go back. It'll be a Monday show. No, I don't think that show happened to be Monday because he was out and about that Monday. But check it out. It's labeled part one of his series all about the feather. If you want to catch up on that at a later date, you can listen to part one of this two-part series from Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, all about the feather. And so today we've got part two. He'll be joining us here in just a little bit. And it'll be a great show, again, with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. So what was I going to say? It was just on the tip. It says it's snowing up there in Connecticut. I'm sorry, Walt. It's about 76 degrees right here. A beautiful sunshiny day. I got short sleeves on. It is awesome. Some severe storms in our area coming up on Wednesday. So we'll get on back to the homestead tonight and hunker down. But Wednesday, they're saying possibly some really severe storms coming through the southeast, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, and our way on Wednesday. Now, why does that make any difference? Just some storms coming through. I got an email over the weekend, and I actually got called and was contacted, and we did touch base. The Fox News affiliate. The Fox News affiliate in Atlanta, I've been on their show several times in the past probably 5, 6, 7 years. They reached out to me, and this Wednesday, I think we're going to postpone it till Thursday, this Wednesday they want to do an episode, a Consumer Report story about all the different types of eggs that are out there for the consumer to choose from. And so I talked to the Consumer Reports producer there at Fox News affiliate in Atlanta, and what we're going to do, they initially want to be in the studio, but then we discussed, and they thought, you know, maybe since I have the Atlanta Backyard Poultry Meetup up there, just shy of 2,000 members, we could find a local inside the perimeter downtown area person that has a beautiful coop with some nice chickens that are laying, and we could do the spot there in their backyard. I'm about 3 hours out of Atlanta since we moved, so I'll be heading back up there. We were planning it for Wednesday, but it looks like we're going to postpone it till Thursday. But they want to do a story about eggs and all the different types of eggs that the consumer can choose from. The grocery store eggs, the brown eggs, the white eggs, the organic eggs, the so-called free range, the so-called range free. Y'all know what that means if you listen to the show long enough, and the trickery there regarding what that really means. The Eggland's Best, to name a brand. Maybe the pasteurized eggs that some grocery stores have that are pasteurized. Yeah, pasteurized eggs. And then, of course, by all means, the backyard eggs that we get from our chickens in our backyards. How beautiful they are, how they taste, the look, the color, the dark, kind of dark yellow, orangey yolks. So I will let all of you know via Facebook and Twitter when exactly that's going to be taped. It may be live. I have a feeling it may be taped and aired on a couple of different segments, like maybe the 6 p.m. and the 10 p.m. or something like that. But I will let y'all know, and if it's on their website, I'll link to it. But this week I'll be up in Atlanta with Fox affiliate doing a story on all the different eggs. They are bringing someone in from the University of Georgia, a specialist, a chicken specialist up there at the agriculture, maybe from the poultry lab. But and I don't know yet, but I've requested Fox 5 if he would kind of tackle and take the bull by the horns regarding the definitions, the true definitions of what you see in the grocery store. We know they're brown eggs, they're white eggs. The color doesn't matter as far as nutrition being better than the other. Whether it's a dark chocolate Moran egg or Moran egg or however you want to pronounce it, to each their own. I've heard it pronounced 1,000 different ways. Okay, the Morans, the dark chocolate egg, or the bright white Leghorn eggs, as far as nutritionally being different, none as far as if you're feeding them the same diet. But we know and we feel, even though there's been very limited study, we all know about the Mother Earth News study that was done about 5 years ago about the true pastured chickens and a third less cholesterol, a third higher in omega-3 fatty acids and all that. We're all familiar and we've seen that story. But other than that, there hadn't been a lot of true studies regarding backyard eggs. So we explained to them, we feel, look, we know what's going into chickens, we know what's coming out of chickens, look at the dense crack, look at the egg white, the egg yolk color, wonderful, but you know, these cost money, and so but we have to feed based on, and we throw that the Mother Earth News study out there because it was done officially. But other than that, it's just we feel because we're doing all these great things, better husbandry, and it's and it's not just about, you know, getting eggs from my backyard that are not, you know, old. Okay, breaking up again. Let's see what we got. Let me try it up. Keep me posted. Testing 1, 2, 3. There's about a 20-second delay. Okay, we're good now. It's going to break up a little bit here and there. If it gets so bad it's annoying, then let me know, and I'll go to a backup, which shouldn't have any problems. This is the most convenient way for me and probably the best-sounding way for me right now. But if it cracks up every now and then because we are on the road, then just let me know. If it gets to be so consistent, it's horrible, I'll do my backup other than that. So, so maybe this week I'll let you know and keep you posted of when – we're going to be on the television regarding that egg story. So, again, I'm hoping the folks from the USDA are up there at the University of Georgia will take the bull regarding, hey, when you go to buy eggs in the store, what does free range really mean? You know, a lot of people think it's a beautiful pasture with little yellow daisies growing out of it and a little red barn behind them and beautiful green grass and the rolling hills. No. No. Okay. It means that they have this long, you know, 300-foot chicken house, and all the birds are just roaming in there. And then have access to the outside. There's a little door at the end of that big 300-foot house, and if the birds choose to go outside on that concrete pad with the chain link fence around it, then that's they can be labeled free range. So it's very trickery there. That's my understanding of that definition. Okay, but I'm hoping he'll take that part of it, and I can be able to concentrate on the beautiful. Now this is two-edged sword here, because we want to kill two birds with one stone, no pun intended. Right now in Cobb County, a big suburb of Atlanta, they've been fighting for a couple of years now trying to get chickens legal there. And so this can also, as we're in the backyard of that, inside Atlanta, inside the perimeter area, showing a beautiful chicken coop with beautiful chickens maintained properly. This is what it's all about, and this is a good example. It could help their cause as people see this about all the great benefits of backyard poultry, specifically in this interview, talking about eggs. By the way, I tried to get my video up, and the video does work, but it is so bright here and beautiful, by the way, Walter, you know, about 76 degrees, short sleeves, nice little breeze under the moss-filled oak trees right next to the lake, and beautiful sun shining clear. I could wear shorts if I wanted to. Had to rub it in there a little bit, Walter, my friend up there in Connecticut. Yeah, gotta love it. Other news. I'll keep you posted on all that. Other news, then we'll get on to Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, with our part two, all about the feather. I wanted to share with y'all, it is now in stone. It is finalized. The Chicken Whisperer Tour 2013, Power to Poultry Tour, Power Tour 2013, our first quarterly tour with Tractor Supply. We'll be at other places other than just the Tractor Supply tours, but once a quarter we'll be doing a tour with Tractor Supply specifically throughout the country, and we have nailed down and finalized our first tour this year, 2013, with Tractor Supply. We are, yep, going on the road again. Gotta love it. And not too far away. Less than the way. And everything has been confirmed. I hit the road. The times and locations listed below are in stone. So here we go. If you got your Chicken Whisperer notebook out with the big CW on it, you take notes from all our expert guests that come on and share their knowledge about backyard poultry, you can write it in there. It's also posted on our Facebook. If you don't want to write all this down, I understand. Okay, starting out Friday, February 22nd, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Friday, February 22nd, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., I will be at the Tractor Supply in Enterprise, Alabama. Enterprise, Alabama. So you need to check those maps as far away you are from there. Unless, of course, you live in California. In that case, it's kind of a long drive just to come listen about chickens. So Friday, February 22nd, 6 to 8 p.m., Enterprise, Alabama. Saturday, February 23rd. All these are right after each other. Saturday, February 23rd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and for that location, there will be a live radio broadcast. We'll broadcast live that Saturday, February 23rd, from the Tractor Supply in Brewton, Alabama. Okay, Brewton, Alabama. These are locations in South Alabama or L.A., Lower Alabama. Yeah, we're going to be in L.A. All right, come see us in L.A. Okay, so Saturday, February 23rd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Brewton, Alabama. Sunday, February 24th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Sunday afternoon after church. You can go to church, you can go out to lunch with the family, stuff your face, then come on over for our big event here. Sunday, February 24th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Pensacola, Florida Tractor Supply. Yep, Pensacola, Florida. Ah, I bet it's going to be about 80 degrees down there with a beautiful breeze right on the coast. Maybe I'll take my beach chair, Walter, and go sit on the beach there in February. Oh, Lordy, gotta love it. Monday, February 25th. Monday, February 25th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Crestview, Florida. Already had someone say Crestview. Andy Miller says, I will be there. That is in my neck of the woods. Great. Crestview, Florida Tractor Supply, February the 25th. And then finally, Tuesday, we'll wrap up the tour. Tuesday, February 26th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Marianna, Florida. And that is all kind of in the Pensacola area, the northwest kind of panhandle part, lower Alabama, L.A., and that northwest part of the panhandle of Florida. 5 days, five events. February 23rd through the 26th, Enterprise, Alabama, Brewton, Alabama, Pensacola, Florida, Crestview, Florida, Marianna, Florida, Chicken Whisperer event. Now, the times we have posted, I will be there officially an hour before that. The times that are posted, my understanding, is the poultry workshop that we'll be doing, teaching you really getting started with backyard poultry, all those folks that are going to be picking up their little baby chicks and their brooders and their feed and all that kind of stuff, wanting to learn a little bit about their backyard poultry. So that I will be there an hour before, officially. Okay, we'll be doing a book signing. We'll have our books available, of course, but we'll be doing book signing, pictures, autographs, and, of course, the questions and answers, and then we'll actually do the official workshop, and then after the workshop, there'll be plenty of time for you to go and pick a few things up off the shelf that we talked about during the workshop, things you might need to get your chickens started successfully. So that's kind of the game plan there regarding our first quarter tour here at Tractor Supply. Don't forget, also in April, if you want to mark your calendars, Alabama's going to be Chicken Whisperer crazy this year. Let's see, I'll be there twice in April, I know of. April the 13th and 14th. Actually, the 12th, 13th, and 14th. April 12th, 13th, and 14th, Northern Alabama, up there in Moulton. Moulton, Alabama, for the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival, the 12th, 13th, and 14th. That's going to be a fun time. I was there last year. 25,000 people attend. 25,000 people. And there's an official poultry show, ABA, APA, poultry sanctioned poultry show there. Awesome. The very next weekend, the 20th of April, we'll be down in the lower part of Alabama, back down to L.A. in Mobile. No Mobile for the Mobile Book Club. I'll be speaking to them, doing a poultry workshop, lunches provided. I'll post all those as they get a little bit sooner. But Alabama is going to be Chicken Whisperer crazy this year regarding events. So you got to love it. Alrighty, hey, it is time for part two of All About the Feather. Again, you can go back and listen to part one on the archives at many different places. Probably the easiest is Blog Talk Radio about 3 weeks ago or so. And again, we are so thrilled to have Peter Brown back today. He scared us a little bit about 2 weeks ago, so we're glad he is back, glad he's recovered nicely. And we're just going to go ahead right now and bring him live on the air. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I couldn't be better. Let me tell you, I am. I'm at just a beautiful place right now. It's blue sky. It's sunny. I'm under a bunch of oak trees with Spanish moss hanging out of them, just right next to a lake. On our way back to the homestead, and it's about 70. I want to say probably 75 degrees. It's just absolutely wonderful. Couldn't be better. In a great mood. Got lots of things going on. Great show today. Looking forward to and great travels coming up. So I'm in a fabulous, fabulous mood. And tell us about you. We're so glad to have you back. And I know you were at the big poultry show. I guess it was last weekend. I hope you got through that okay. I know you felt obligated to go, even though you had the medical issue earlier. But tell us, give us an update, Peter.
Yeah, I as you all know, but I guess 2 weeks to the day today, I actually thought I was having a stroke. Scared the living daylights out of me. I don't need to tell anybody that. And I just didn't want to wait around here. I was by myself in the office, and didn't think it was smart to wait around and wait for the other shoe to drop. So that's when I shot you that short email and headed to the ER. Not sure exactly what went on, other than the fact that whatever it was seemed to have gone away, and they run a bunch of tests and other things. It doesn't seem to be. Could have been dietary, for that matter. So we just don't know at this point. But, you know, we're watching it, and I curtailed my physical activities a little bit until we find out a little bit more about it. I got a couple more tests that have been run, waiting for the results to come back from those, and if they're good to go, then I'm going to get back to the exercise routine that I was on before. As far as the show goes up there in New England, I felt obligated to go, even though I didn't feel like going. I also have this muscle issue. The longer I stand, the worse it gets. And by the time Saturday night rolled around there, I wasn't worth 2 cents to anybody, not even myself. Just miserable. But that being said, we got a lot of people up there, Andy, that like this show. I'll tell you what I'm going to do next time around. If it's all right with you, we haven't had an opportunity to talk since the this episode. But I'm going to carry a clipboard with me, and everybody that comes by that tells me they listen to us on the air, we'll write it down, and then when we get back on the air again, I'm going to mention all those names because my head gets too filled with information and things, and I can't. I'm terrible with names anyway. It's a wonder I remember my own some days, but. Great, tremendous amount of people. There are a few people who come to mind. Walt came by, spent some time with us there talking and so on. Bob Roxbury from Massachusetts came by. Roberta Collins from New York. Melina Brown from Connecticut. Just a few that I remember. I've been conversing back and forth with a lot of these folks with emails and so on and so forth. So it's great to see all these people. Great that they're listening to the show, continue to do so. There were a whole bunch of other people that came by. I just don't remember all the names, like I said, but we were busy. We did well, and it's always fun to meet all of the people associated, with listening to the show and hopefully getting something out of it and that kind of thing. So it was invigorating from that standpoint. And those that know me know that I'll stand there with you and talk the ear off a brass monkey. It doesn't matter to me. The more questions you ask, the more things we can solve and give out good solid information. The stronger the community will be. So that's what it is all about. And we are still talking about doing something. Hopefully in the Connecticut area as a seminar, an all-day-long disease seminar, some of it being hands-on, how to vaccinate and different things. we're trying to get something like that together. So great things coming. It's an interesting thing. I had an opportunity to speak with a vendor that was next to me, one of the feed companies there. I think they're out of Vermont. And we had long discussions about some of his birds, problems that he was having, so on and so forth, with his own flock. And they're moving along to a lot of these essential oils being put into their feed and so on, which is a good thing. And we discussed that, and I guess he was surprised to find out that I knew all about it and what they were and what they did and so on and so forth. And he wanted to know if what it would cost them to get me to talk to their 12 salesmen for a day or so and as a seminar and go through. So it was interesting. We left it open, and I'd get back to them. Never done it for a corporation, and for me to go where they are is quite a haul. But I'm interested in it. And so it was a great thing to see everybody that I hadn't seen, a lot of folks that I didn't know were listening to the show and that kind of thing. Have them come by and shake hands and discuss all of these things.
And I'm sure give you well wishes and let you know that you were in everybody's prayers. Everybody in the chat room right now saying, please tell Peter we were praying for him and for a quick recovery. And you had a lot of people thinking about you, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate all of the emails. All of the good thoughts, prayers, and what have you from everybody from Facebook right on down. It is appreciated. I've worked very hard to keep my health up, so it kind of took me by surprise. I was actually kind of annoyed. I put a lot of time and effort into making myself self healthy after the heart attack. So, It was a great time up there, even though for me, you know, physically it was a chore. It's a seven-hour drive if you never get out of the vehicle, and I did that on the way up. It took us a little bit over 8 hours to get back, you know, home. Just totally wrung out and exhausted. You know, anybody that knows that's tried to get a hold of me on the phone, good luck, because it ain't happening. It will here eventually. I've got calls and stuff getting back, and but it's been an adventure, and I appreciate all those folks that were along for the ride. So.
It's not just the drive which wears you out. It's those 2 days of the show. I mean, you carry your van and your trailer, and you have to unpack and repack, and then it's the love, you love, and I've been at the Ohio National when we saw each other. It's, you know, consistent, you know, all that day talking with people, and which is great and fun, but it just wears you out, you know, mentally and physically, not just the sale portion of making those sales, explaining about the product, answering the questions and interacting and being so focused. It's mentally draining as well.
Yeah, and, you know, this muscle issue, we've never gotten a handle on it, but it's quite debilitating after a while, and seems to be the more I stand, the worse it is, and it's not a spinal issue. The muscles from the shoulder blades down to my kidneys and around to my side actually become extremely sore to the touch just standing. I don't have to be lifting anything. I don't have to be doing anything other than just standing up. And I have to say this, that on Saturday we were so busy talking to people and just doing all the things that are associated with being there, you know, that it I never really got to sit down the whole day. And so by the time it came to go to the hotel and eat, I was more than ready. And
you're probably standing on a concrete floor, like Yardbird said in the chat room, standing on that concrete floor.
Yeah, we did get some of that some of those mats that you put together, interlock. They're nice if you're standing in one spot there, but you know, so many times you're just talking to people off the side, or you go out in front of your booth and talk to somebody about something or whatever the case may be, demonstrating something or whatever it is. I mean, it was a great time. Don't get me wrong. It's just that it is, you know, and I'm not 42 years old anymore either, so it makes a bit of a difference. But, you know, and when you don't feel good on top of it, it wasn't just the situation of the possible stroke. It was the muscle issue and... Prior to going to the hospital, I had picked up a little bit of a cold, came out of the hospital, and the very next day, I picked up something there in the emergency room as well, so I had a double whammy on top of me. You know, when I left here to go to that show, you know, I was running a slight fever, and not a big deal, but still running a slight fever, and, you just don't feel good. I don't know how to explain it other than the fact you feel like crap. You know, it is just not good at all. And so anyway, we're, you know, back here trying to get things going and really chomping at the bit to do the show. I do enjoy it to try to put out the information that people, you know, need to make their flocks better in whatever way, shape, or form we can do. And so one thing before we go on, I find this very interesting, you know, I don't usually get governmental very much, but you know, everybody's worried about taxes and how much they're going to take out of your paycheck. I just thought it was interesting. We stayed in the Sheraton in Springfield, Mass. Wonderful place, great people, and a very good facility. And we had a special rate through the club that puts on the show there, but it was $92 a night, and you know, that wasn't so bad, but I couldn't believe the taxes that these people have, the audacity and the nerve. No wonder nobody wants to travel to some of these places.
On a hotel room, you're exactly right. It's like 12% or more on hotel tax. I'm as a traveler, I'm familiar, my friend.
Yeah, I think you know, it was interesting, and I wrote them down just so I could remember them, because it kind of ticked me off just a tad. The state tax on a room was 5.7%.
Okay.
The city tax was 5%. And then there was a city assessment, BID, whatever the heck it means. That was the least, it was 50 cents. And this one floored me. The other two, I understand, they're kind of standard everywhere you go. This was a civic center fund tax, 2.75%. So when you looked at the taxes on the rooms, it came to $5.24, $4.60, 50 cents, and $2.53.
Yeah, about 12%.
And it just floors me that these people have the nerve and the audacity. I've never been to the Civic Center, and quite frankly, probably never go.
All right.
But you still paid 3% for something you never stepped foot in. It's kind of an interesting thing. But
Bob, Bard Rock in the chat room says, welcome to Taxachusetts.
Oh,
instead
yeah.
of Massachusetts, it's Taxachusetts.
I don't get it. I believe in, obviously, like anybody else, paying what we consider a fair share. But well, let me just say this, and I'll move off of this because you could spend all day on it and not get to the subject we came here to speak about. But truth in government doesn't happen. It's a constant lie that comes out of Washington. It's been coming out of there since the government was born. And, proof of that is that most people don't understand about the beer tax in the United States. I do not drink beer. I don't really care one way or another, but let me explain how they slip this in on you as no big deal to you, the end user. But the beer tax came along in, I believe it was 1862, during the Civil War, as a 1% temporary tax to fund the war, or to help fund the war. And so that was then, and this is now. And now the federal there's a federal barrel tax, barrel consisting of 31 gallons of beer, and that federal tax is $18 for every barrel produced. $18, mm-hmm. And it amounts on an annual basis in the U.S. of about $3.8 billion. Okay. Now each state, and this is before you get to your state sales taxes, by the way. This is over and above, and each state has their own barrel tax on top of the federal tax, say. And that amounts to another $1.8 billion. So you're worried about what you're going to take home in your paycheck. And the way this was is explained away, see, is that on average, though, but the tax only amounts to 5 cents a can.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You see, so you won't notice. It's only a nickel.
I will elaborate on that just to a very quick, very, very quick. My brother-in-law worked for a contractor for the government. I won't mention where. And he actually ended up getting hired by the government. So he is a federal employee now. And probably something in IT. He's always worked with computers. And this is the God's honest truth. Towards the end of the year, His department had $88,000 in surplus that they didn't use for the year. And his boss came to him and said, spend it. And he says, we're not going to give it back to the taxpayers. We're not going to keep it for next year. We're not going to keep it in a savings or an emergency. We have to spend it and spend it before the end of the year. So what he did was, he bought his daughter, who's graduating college. She works for the newspaper there. She's getting into media and things like that. A beautiful, the thing I think he said ended up saying was $1,200 for Christmas. Beautiful Canon, digital camera, all these lenses and all that kind of stuff, autofocus. $1,200, okay, he bought it for his daughter. Well, he said his department had all these little cheapo little digital cameras, so he went and he searched, and he bought the exact same package that he bought his daughter, down to the exact lens cover, the exact same thing. He bought his daughter for $1,200 for Christmas. He had the receipts. Because he had to buy from a government provider, he paid three times as much for this exact same thing. It was like $3,200 for the exact same thing. He paid out of his pocket $1,200 for his daughter. I mean, he had the receipts, the same lenses, the same bag, the same covers, everything, because he had to buy from a government supplier. three times as much. And he was disgusted with it. He's one of us. You know, he's just like, are you kidding me? And his boss is like, I know. I came from private industry. I don't ask. Just spend the money. So it was $88,000 and three times as much. It was really sad. We know that happens, but to hear it firsthand that it really did happen from your brother-in-law, that it's not just media, it's not just some crazy tax site that's against taxes or whatever. It's right from him who had to spend the money and shop for the and you know it was amazing. So let's talk about the feather chickens.
Yep.
Like a feather, birds flock together, or whatever the saying is. So. Part one you can listen to on the archive show. This will be part two. And again, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, also founder of First Aid Vet Supply. We've got part two, which, of course, is all about the feather. Doc, we're ready to take some notes.
Yeah. In the beginning, in the first segment, we talked about, you know, types of feathers, different types of feathers and how they interacted with each other, fluffy down-type feathers and so on and so forth, and bristles and all of that. What we want to talk about today, and not overly in-depth because it can become very, very complicated and more than a person probably wants to know at the end of the day. But with that being said, the main source of feather growth is through what we call the feather follicle. All the feather follicles that a bird will ever have in its lifetime are laid down when it's an embryo. And generally speaking, you can start to see them in the embryonic development somewhere around 5 days of incubation or so, give or take a little bit. Some breeds might be a little bit earlier, some breeds might be a little bit later. But by and large, that's what you're going to end up seeing, and that's where all of the feather development will come from, whether it's downy feathers or whether it ends up being the hard keratinized feathers. And so in looking at a bird, if you next time you grab a whole chicken or so from the supermarket, you can really look and see where the feather tracks are. When you look at birds, you would think that one feather is exactly close to the next one next to it. And for the most part, that's not necessarily true. There are specific tracks of feathers up and down the bird's body from head to toe or head to tail, however way you want to look at it. And it's within those actual feather tracks where the feather follicles are located, and that's where the feather growth is going to take place. Now, we've all heard about blood feathers and everything else, and what this really means is this is the accumulation of blood and hormones and everything else that are right under and in the bottom of the feather follicle, which will grow out into a finished feather. So it's growing out from what when we talked about the integumentary system, which was the skin and everything else, we talked about the dermis. So this is going to grow from the feather follicle located on dermis and grow out from there. Now, this feather follicle is highly vascularized. All that means to you is loaded with blood vessels. And from there and so on, and that's where the growth will come from. As the feather develops and pushes itself out and becomes a mature feather, what happens then is that these vascularized little veins and blood vessels and what have you, they will dry up. And if you want to see what they look like next time you have a feather laying around in the yard, lay it on a piece of board or whatever, and split the lower end of the feather where it would have gone into the feather follicle, and that pulpy material inside that you'll see, it's a white pulpy material, that is the dried up portion of these blood vessels. Keratin, which the feather is basically made out of, is just a complex protein. So what you're going to have then is the bird let's say, losing its downy feathers or its downy cover and starting to put on these feathers that will come out in specific areas called feather tracks up and down the bird, from head to tail and so on, down around the bottom of the breast, up under the wings and so on. And all of them are going to be put on technically in a specific order when birds molt out and that kind of stuff. You'll start to see the molting with the head of the bird first, and then down around the neck, the body, the wing, and the tail, basically the last part to molt out. But and we'll come back to molting. I just wanted to throw that out there for you. Now, one thing I want to say is that no new feather follicles develop after the birds are hatched. All that is done in the egg and is controlled genetically and hormonally as to the placement and so on. You get into the color of the feathers briefly, basically. Again, this is controlled by melanin. We all are familiar with that. I have some freckles on my hands, face, and whatever, and that's an over-deposition or over-deposit of melanin. Birds have the same thing. The amount of melanin, again, is controlled by hormones, genetics, and also can be controlled by the presence or lack of a particular amino acid. Amino acids are the proteins and building blocks of life. Without certain ones, neither human nor animal or bird can survive. There are a number of amino acids that are available to birds. Some of them they synthesize from things that they eat. Some of them are supplemented in their diet. There are certain amino acids that are what we call essential amino acids, means that the bird's life can't go on without that particular amino acid compound. And if it's missing somewhere in its diet, then the bird becomes deficient, whether it be feather growth, whether it be the ability to put on weight, or the ability to digest its food or anything else like that. So as far as the color is concerned, triosine, spelled T-Y-R-O-S-I-N-E, is what we call a non-essential amino acid. The reason for this is that it will take an essential amino acid, okay, which is phenylalanine. I'll spell that for you. It's a little bit tricky. That's P-H-E-N-Y-L-A-L-A-N-I-N-E. Excuse me. And it is from that this tyrosine will be synthesized. So you can see the importance of the essential amino acid to the non-essential, because the non-essential one will get its, you know, get made from the original essential amino acid. I know that's a little bit confusing, but just think of it this way: as it's something that it has to have to make something else that it needs. Might be an easier way to try to explain that. Okay, so the tyrosine is non-essential because it's going to get made from the phenylalanine, and which is an essential required amino acid. You can see this in some of the things that we sell, and this is not a basic advertisement for it, but this is one of the things that makes the A-Lite amino acid concentrate such a tremendous product, because it has all of the basic essential amino acids in it. So this is one of the reasons why, when we put that on birds that were not producing properly, not feathering out properly, these kinds of things, we can see a boost either in egg production, they go back into producing eggs, or they start feathering out now, because these amino acids that are not only essential but non-essential are then allowed to be produced and you know, help the bird continue on, you know, with its growth cycle. The pattern of color in a bird's feathers is predominantly genetic and hormonal both. It's either for the male, the testosterone levels, and for females, the estrogen level. And this can also alter the deposition of the melanin in the bird's feathers. So that's why you'll see different colorations with birds as far as the different color patterns you'll see in birds, dark to black to the blues to the reds and this kind of thing. The genes are also, when birds feather out like silkies, you know, big puff balls, that's all genetically controlled, okay, more so than it would be a hormonal thing. It's all genetically controlled by the breeding of the bird. Frizzles are another one. And any time you get those real downy-type feathers, you'll find that basically the same thing. So the hormone, excuse me, that does play a large part in the growth of feathers for birds. It's much like the thyroid hormone in humans, thyroxine, produced in the thyroid, and this is responsible for helping with the growth of the feathers. The absence of this, the absence of this will keep a bird from molting, and then the addition of it will help them drop their feathers. We'll go into molting here in another minute or so. And then the estrogen and the testosterone help with the feather growth as well. Light patterns help with feather growth as far as how quick they may grow out, and this is exerting a influence of the light on the pituitary gland. This controls the production of the hormones that we just talked about, the thyroxine and the estrogen, both on the male and the female. So the light helps with those two hormones and helps to bring on sexual maturity as well, and therefore helps with the feather feather growth. And this is one of the reasons why we'll see when you lengthen a bird's day length, more of these types of hormones will be produced, and when the day length is shortened, you'll see a slowdown in the production of these two hormones, the three of them, the thyroxine, the testosterone, and the estrogen, as far as the feathers and the feather growth is concerned. Now, molting is a is an animal kind of all in of itself, and molting in birds, again, can be controlled by hormones, just as much as laying eggs is controlled by hormones. We talked about months back, we talked about egg-laying hormones, the hormone inhibin, how it interferes with the follicle-stimulating hormones in birds, and generally that hormone is starting to be produced in birds as soon as they basically start laying eggs. More and more of it gets produced and eventually turns off the egg laying. Now, genetics also plays a role in how a bird will molt. Sometimes I get asked, my bird should be molting, but it's still laying eggs. How can that be? It's October, and they should have had all their feathers dropped off by now. It is possible, and it does happen with birds that are genetically high producers and have a high propensity for the persistency gene. Persistency is basically the gene that controls the what we call the clutch cycle, or how many eggs the bird's going to lay before it takes a day off. The more commercial type birds, to my knowledge, have a lot of this particular thing going on with them, where because they're now getting in excess of 300 eggs per year from these birds, they don't take very many days off. So that when, if the bird is kept up nutritionally, it has to do with body weight, from the standpoint that a bird that is maintaining its body weight or gaining a little bit of weight can molt and lay eggs at the same time. Okay. It does happen. I've had people call me and say, you know, like I said, it's October, we should be. And what happens is that sometimes they'll go through this molt and you really don't realize it, that they are molting. Generally, most molts will take, on average, of about 6 weeks. And I know somebody will say, well, mine took 8, mine took 10, mine took 4, whatever. That's all genetics. It's all breed-related. As far as the molting cycle is concerned, the birds that are laying a lot of eggs almost every day, if not every day, when they do molt, they generally are fast molters compared to your other birds that would be generally molting right around July, August, somewhere in that range. So you can see it. You can see these birds that have this ability, and they can be in some of your heritage breeds as well. I don't know which particular ones would be carrying it, but those that have them, they're out there that lay eggs consistently, and don't seem to drop too many feathers. They're probably molting and laying at the same time. Now, we generally don't see this happen in birds that are losing body weight and not being maintained nutritionally. Okay, those are the birds that don't have these types of genes, and they will probably start molting in late July, late August, anywhere in between there. You'll start to see them, and they normally will take about 6 weeks or so for these birds to drop their feathers. The time to molt about 6 weeks. The greatest feather growth during that 6 week period of time, you usually, and these are all parameters that were developed many years ago, so some of them may have changed somewhat a little bit, again due to breeding, genetics, and this kind of thing, but generally you get your greatest growth during the first 3 weeks of feather replacement. Anywhere between 50% and 60% of the feathers will grow out to their natural state in about 3 weeks, and then the balance of it will come along in the last 3 weeks. My guess on this, I haven't seen anything over the years really written about this particular aspect, but probably to get them these feathers replaced, not only for weather purposes, but for also the purposes of flying and getting away from predators and things of that nature. So molting itself is a process. You've heard me say before, you know, laying eggs is a monumental task. Well, molting is right behind it. And just think about what's going on, inside of one of these little machines that you've got in your backyard that everybody takes for granted. These guys are, if they're still laying eggs late into the season, and either whether they have molted or they haven't molted, there's a monumental thing going on here. 50% plus of the calcium in the bird's body is being mobilized to put down an eggshell. Using up protein about as fast as you can give it to them. Pretty much voracious eaters, good eaters, and good health, good body size, putting out good-sized eggs every day, and then to drop feathers on top of that and then ask your body to give me back some more protein so I can put it into these feathers and push them out. That's a huge, huge undertaking. And if you've got birds like that in your backyard, you're blessed. You really are, and it's a sight to see. I don't think people understand, just how great these little machines are. But on another note, too, with the molting, I just want to go into it real quick. Generally, once a year molting, it's generally a situation that brings itself into view once per year. Stress is another thing that brings into play here with these things. This will bring birds into a molt situation. Lots of times we'll see birds who've lost a lot of neck feathers. They got all the feathers on the head, and they got them all down on the breast, but almost in between there's nothing. That's called a neck molt, generally brought about, not by mites, can be, but generally not. It's generally brought about by stress. That stress could be within the flock. Birds that are kept in cages, we often see that neck molt that they go into. And they can molt anywhere on their body. They can start dropping feathers off their back. We see that from time to time, too. We see birds that don't have a rooster tearing up their backs and everything else, but they're losing the feathers off the back. Again, nutrition. It plays a big part in these things, the overall health of the bird, the condition of the intestine and the gut itself. We talked many, many times about the degree of immune cells that lie within the bird's intestines. So you have almost two-thirds of the bird's intestinal immune cells lying in the intestine. If the intestine is not right, you got two-thirds of the bird that isn't right, and it's an uphill battle all the time. So you won't generally see a bird in poor condition that's going to be laying an egg every day laying eggs and molting at the same time. You won't see it as a general rule. There's always, for the most part, an exception to a rule somewhere along the line. But generally, bird to continue to lay eggs during the molt, generally, like I said, you'll find them in very good flesh, maintaining their weight and or slightly putting on weight. Those that have a tendency to lose weight will generally stop laying, drop their feathers, take their 6 or 8 weeks to put the feathers back on, and then may take some time to go back into laying. Depends on the bird, depends on genetics, depends on the lighting, depends on what kind of food they're getting, the whole nine yards. So the molt in itself is quite a big deal. Now, excuse me. Do birds go into a molt twice a year? Yep, it can happen. And again, some of it brought around by genetics, some of it brought around by stress. And stresses can be anything: lack of food, lack of water, too much breeding pressure in the breeding pen. Not enough lights, too much lights, all kinds of different things. Genetics plays a huge role in a lot of these things. Disease, all of these things will play a role in it. Now, are there birds that will molt, let's say, once every 2 years? Yep, they're in there too. That does happen. It's more of an anomaly. It's not an everyday thing as a general rule. But again, some birds just don't drop their feathers like everybody else. I think that a lot of the things that we knew or know about poultry that are very, very old and have been reinvestigated, will show you the different things that come along that were not looked at years and years ago for whatever the reason may be. But we're getting into more and more stuff these days, and I thought that going through looking at feathers and just getting a general understanding of what it's all about and how it comes about and that how difficult it is. When we ask these guys to pump out eggs like we usually ask them to do, it's a big deal. It is a big deal. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much done with that, Andy. Listen,
okay. No
got
problem.
Any questions or anything?
Let me go to a commercial break. I know we had a couple of people in the chat room first thing. We're asking some questions again. They may be first-time listeners. We may have asked them, answered them in the past. That's kind of routine for people that can listen and may not listen every day. So let me go to a commercial break. I'll also maybe post something over on our Facebook page if they have any questions to post them just for the next few minutes. And we'll go to break, and I'll do that. And maybe we can answer a few of their questions they've got
sure.
in the chat room.
My
all
right,
sounds great. I'll put you on hold. We're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of First State Vet Supply. You can find them online, firststatevetsupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. And great deals over there. His website, including a brand new emergency medicine kit, not just a first aid kit, but an emergency medicine kit to have on hand. Because we've stressed on the show so many times, take that 5-gallon bucket out, sit there with your birds, examine them, take a look at them, see if they're acting differently, get an idea of how they act normally. And then when you see the first signs of any illness, that's when you need to deal with this. So if you wait too long, then you've waited too late in many cases. So firststatevetsupply.com. We'll continue maybe with some of your questions when we return right after this short break. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys,
guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for Super Chicken. You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All righty, thank you very much for joining us today, staying with us on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. It was part two of a two-part series all about the feather, and you can actually get all the information in the full episode of part one in our archives at, of course, blogtalkradio.com. So they were talking about the weather in the chat room, and, of course, I had to put, sunny and warm here, with a slight breeze that cools the arms in my short sleeve shirt. Oh, me, they're like, stop rubbing it in. So, gotta love it, gotta love it. I posted over on Facebook that we had a few minutes to answer some questions, and let me go ahead and post it in the chat room. Any questions for Peter, while we have him for a few more minutes? Of course, health questions, questions about poultry, questions about coming up, maybe brooding or incubation that you might have as we get here. As spring gets a little bit closer, let me scroll up here and see if there were any that were posted. I know we had a couple early on when we first started the show. I won't be able to scroll up that far. So if you have questions, if you're listening live, let's see. Send me that message again, Dragon, via the private message. And so and I'll make sure I get Peter that message for you. And let's see. No sound. Still, let me get a sound check. Dragon's saying no sound. I'm off mute. I did push the mute button this time. So I'm off mute. Let me get a sound check. We're about a 15-20 second delay from live. Yes, Joni had a question. We'll get to that in just a second. Okay, very good. Sounding pretty good. So I'm not sure, Dragon Flyer, about that. Let me update over here on Facebook, see if we have any over there. Occasionally we'll have some that we do. Let's see. Okay, got a couple of them there. I'm going to go ahead and go to the chat room before it scrolls away. And let me get back over here to the switchboard. I'll bring Peter back live, which he is back live now. And let's see. Joni has a hen that is unable to keep her balance. Eyes are looking gray in the pupil. I've been giving her a St. John's wort. Balance not getting any better, but eyes are looking more normal. And I believe earlier on she had mentioned possible Merrix, but not sure. That's all the information I have right now from Joni, Doc.
Yeah, I generally speaking, I can't see the bird, and even if I could, it's if it is Merrix, it's an internal thing, and you can't see it generally from the outside. But I would look in the bird's ears. It's one of the first places that I suggest that folks look for abnormalities. There are several people who were at the show up in Springfield, approached me and had some problems with birds with ear infections. They do get them. It's caused by a bacteria that can be aggressive, and sometimes it can be benign. It just depends on which one of these you have. But Enterobacter faecalis is the usually one of the offending bacteria. Could be Pseudomonas, staph, or any of those. So I would look there first. You'll know it when you see it. It's a orange to maybe more yellow-looking waxy core right in the ear, and there'll be some swelling sometimes if it's been there for a long time. You get some swelling around the outside of the ear. And left unchecked, it'll end up killing the bird because that's real close to the brain, so you'll get some problems associated that way. Generally, amoxicillin and Otomax put directly in the ear, with the Otomax, the amoxicillin being given orally, depending upon the size of the bird, 250 milligrams once or twice a day. And it can be a long-term thing. I've got a case in New York that's been going on for quite some time, and we're not even sure now where we're going to go with it. We've used so many different things. We seem to gain a foothold, and then it one step forward, two back, two forward, three back. So it's a net gain of nothing. But that's the first place I look. Barring that, and you'll need a focus beam flashlight to look in the ear. Somebody have to hold the bird for you, hold the head still, look, see what you can see. If you don't see anything in there, assume that that's not the problem. And then I would take a look at it being a problem with Merrick's. If you determine in your mind that this is a case of Merrick's, bear in mind Merrick's comes in all different forms. There's the ocular form. There's a neurological form, which attacks the brain. There is the visceral form, which attacks the organs of the body. There's the form that attacks the nerves, which is the most common we see. This is responsible for the crippling of the legs and the wings and sometimes even the neck. So you can't see those things from the outside. You could see the ocular one, but you wouldn't be able to see the others. My thing here would be to, she didn't say what size of the bird was, but it's really not going to matter. Bear brand baby aspirin, 81 milligrams, three times a day, morning, noon, and not too late in the evening. If you gave it at 8, you gave it at 12 noon, by 5 o'clock you'd want to have that last one into them, make sure they drink plenty of water while they're doing it. And then the turmeric. We've had some success with the turmeric. The problem with doing these things is that if, let's assume for the moment that it is Merrick's, and you're using the aspirin to help bring down some swelling, and you're using the turmeric to try to get this under control and possibly kill off some of the cells that are causing the Merrick's, that you're probably going to have to do this for a long period of time. So you have to factor that in as quality of life for two people, the bird and yourself. When I say a long time, you're probably looking at a minimum of 30 days. I had someone who I had instructed to do this, and the bird was gaining ground every day. And they thought that the bird had gained all the ground it was going to gain, so they put it in with the other birds, and it's regressed back now, and now seems nothing works. So, it's one of those things that you're going to have to take a look at. The turmeric, I would look at giving a 1,000 milligrams three times a day, irregardless of the size of the bird. And you want one that's potentiated with bioperine, that's bioperine, which is an extract of the black peppercorn. We're finding a lot of these things now. I've been doing a lot of work in that natural area, and a lot of your natural products don't necessarily work as advertised. And I have come to the conclusion that it is not because the product itself is necessarily bad. It's because it doesn't absorb well through the intestinal wall. And that's where you're starting to see these products now come along with the bioperine, or you'll see another one, piperine, these two products, which are just an extract of the black peppercorn, but they've been proven, the bioperine is a patented product that has been shown to enhance the uptake of these things, these natural substances, through the intestinal wall. As a matter of fact, sometime this week we're going to launch our oil of oregano with piperine, and it's a tremendous product. Here's the other thing about these things. I don't believe, and I've seen enough research over the years that with these natural products that you can wait to have a full-blown problem and expect it to take care of, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
As a general rule, it's just not going to happen. Just like we see with people who have debilitating diseases in this country, whether it be cancer or whatever, if it isn't caught early, you've got a battle on your hands, everybody's got an opinion about all of these things. But I've studied this stuff a long, long time, and been looking for the key to the lockbox that makes this stuff work. Even the turmeric is a great product; it absorbs decent by itself, but it absorbs better with the Bioperine, and that's a fact. So, you know, I think that the key to all of this stuff is just that. And then the other thing you have to look at is that assume that this bird has Marek's. I know this is a long answer, but assume that this is Marek's. Unless you knew that you could clear this bird, every time this bird flaps its wings, it's going to be spreading it around. So that's another factor that has to be taken into consideration. And some people don't mind doing that and not worried about the possible consequences. And other people do worry about it. So I just throw it out there for people to make the decision.
Sounds great. Great answer. And I'm more here for Bob. This is a good answer because we've heard conflicting information on this, and it was related to today's show. If, for example, a bird loses feathers to a predator attack, I've heard that if the feather is plucked out, follicle and all, that it won't come back until after they molt, whenever they molt, but if it's broken off, that it will work back out another feather. So the question basically is, if feathers are pulled out or broken, is the difference between when it will come back, if that happens?
Well, I think I got what you're talking about. You were breaking up pretty bad there.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. My interpretation of it, and again, there's always exceptions to the rule, and I've dealt with quite a few of these here recently, fox attacks that have ripped the skin off of the bird's back right down to the meat, and the feathers all grew back in short order. I don't know. Because I don't think you can find research to say that you know they don't look at it as to somebody pulling it out or breaking off. For all intents and purposes, the vascularization of the lower end of the feather that is in the feather follicle dries up after the feather matures and turns into the pulp that is in the bottom part of that feather. So by pulling it out, it would seem to me that knowing what I know about it and how it's hormonally controlled and everything else, that it would put another feather back in there. Can I say that would happen 100% of the time? No, I cannot. But by and large, from what I have seen, they do go back and put these feathers in. And like I said, birds that are high producers molt and lay at the same time. And you know, we never used to think of it in that way. We always thought that cessation of egg production and then molt. And today, because of the genetics and stuff, it isn't quite that way. So, from my experiences of what I've seen with attacks on birds, I would say that the majority of these would probably grow back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it makes much difference whether it's pulled out or it's broken off. You know, if it's broken off and there's a piece still in the feather follicle, I don't think it's going to push out and put another one in, if that's the question. No.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that's going to happen. Okay, so if the feather breaks off, from what I've seen and heard from people is, even in the show thing, it can take 6 weeks to put that feather back in, but if you pull out that piece of feather shaft that's broken off, another feather should follow after that, and I'm pretty sure that's going to happen the majority of the time. But as far as breaking it off, if you just took a snipper and snipped off some feathers, it would just sit there. it's not going to push another feather through.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. We've got one here. A pretty simple short answer, so a couple of others. But are there any diseases or illnesses specific to silkies versus bees that are out there, large fowl and all the other breeds? Any specific that you know of to silkies and all silkies?
Well, yeah, I guess I wouldn't say it's specific to them. I would say that mm-hmm. something that they might be
more susceptible
to because of their breeding. And again, that's hard for me to say because I number one, I don't get to see all these birds that when people call in here or send me an email, and I don't know what kind of conditions they're kept in either, all kinds of different problems. But coccidiosis is probably one of the biggest problems that I see in all birds, not just silkies. We've talked about it before. It's a very debilitating disease. It doesn't take long to kill birds. A lot of mistruths out there over the years that continue to be perpetuated by those who are not in the know at all. If you don't have blood in the droppings, you don't have coccidiosis. Wrong. That kind of thing. We just see that all the time, out there. And all these cockamamie methods that some people want to use for controlling these kinds of problems. And I'll say this again because I said it a lot at the show up in Springfield to folks that came by. If you really want to know what's going on with your birds, get that 5-gallon bucket, get that rocking chair, sit out in the middle of the yard, obviously when the weather's appropriate, and look at them all. And I will tell you this, as I've told people from time and time again, when Molly comes across the yard, she's dragging her tail, she ain't having a bad day like you do. They don't have that, not to my knowledge. And by and large, when you go pick her up, she's got mites or she's got cocci or she's got some other problem going on or some digestive issue or whatever. That's the time to get on it, right there when you first see her. And if circumstance comes up and you don't have time to do it right then and there, don't forget about her tomorrow, because in a couple of days she'll probably be dead. So your best defense against any poultry disease on birds that you've had and are on your yard mm-hmm. is to sit and watch them. And that's the best advice I can give to anybody. But, again, going back to the original question was something specific, to silkies. They do have the twisted neck syndrome thing, which generally turns out to be or what appears to turn out to be a vitamin E deficiency,
mm-hmm.
sometimes easily corrected by just shoving a few of them little footballs down their throat, and they go on. I don't know why it is, because they don't seem to go back and regress after that, most of them, at least the ones that I've been dealing with. So but that's a vitamin issue more so than a disease per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, just from their genetics and their breeding and stuff, they might be a little bit on the weaker side, immunologically. But nothing that can't be handled with a little bit of due diligence and watching things, it's kind of like going down the road knowing you got a bad tire on the car. Big difference between doing 20 miles an hour and 100. Okay,
right.
When the tire goes out at 100, you got problems. It goes out at 20, you could probably control it. Same thing here, and just by controlling what's out there and taking a look at things and asking the right questions from the right people. I guess I'll get off that.
No, I understand. No problem. So, thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to have you on here that have been posted on Facebook here in just a second. But we appreciate you coming on. We're glad you're doing better. We're glad that you're on the road to recovery, and it wasn't anything, again, more serious. Let me get over here to my power plug, or everybody's going to lose everything here in a second. But thank you very much for coming on today, and we all look forward to having you here next Monday in a great episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor. So we appreciate you coming on, and
hope
you have a great week.
I've got something uh-huh. next week we can talk about that I'm actually running some experiments on now. So I don't know if I have any results of that, but we're going to do a little bit of an in-depth discussion, probably take the one show, and we're going to talk about chicken's comb. And it's going to be interesting. And
you can answer this one. Somebody had shared about frostbite, and they had a little bit of frostbite on the chicken's comb. It turned black, and they're asking, will that black part fall off?
Yeah, generally it does. That's usually dead tissue once it turns black, and the chances of it reverting back to anything red, you know, are next to none. So what I would do is I would I would put some triple antibiotic ointment on, or any kind of Neosporin or anything like that, and keep an eye on it, make sure it doesn't become infected, make sure it doesn't start bleeding once it starts to come off. And we will go into all of this.
Right.
Next week, we will go into the vascularization of the comb. Some fascinating information, just fascinating information. And we'll give you some tips on how to try to prevent the freezing of the comb, and we'll also give you some ideas on why it does.
Sounds like a plan. That's awesome. Well, that'll be next Monday here on a great episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor. Peter, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
We'll see you, Andy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, and I'll be back here in just a second. I've got a couple more I want to answer that have been posted on our Facebook page. So we'll be back. Very, very short break here coming up, and we'll be back to answer a couple of more from Facebook. Okay, here we go.
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds. Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us here on Backyard Poultry with the Whisperer. Let me get back over here to our Facebook page. There was a couple that I was going to comment on. Of course, we'll wrap up the show if I can press the right button. Let's see. I will. Okay, first off, Heidi asked, do you have to use a heat lamp on day-old chicks? Now, the answer to that is yes. And if you're letting Broody Mama raise those baby chicks, she sat on them, she incubated them, she hatched them out, and now you've got, you know, a half a dozen to a dozen chicks out there in the coop. Maybe you separated them, maybe you didn't, and you're allowing Broody Mama to raise them. Broody Mama's going to do it. That's what she's done for the last 6,000 years. Chickens have been domesticated. So the last 6,000 years without human intervention, regardless of what time of year it is, Broody Mama will do just fine. If you brought day-old baby chicks home from Tractor Supply or at your local feed and seed store, or you got old baby chicks ordered via the mail, then yes, they're going to need a heat source for quite some time, probably somewhere between 4 and 6 weeks as they're in the brooder before they're fully feathered out and ready to go outside. So the question there is yes or no, depending on who you're going actually to raise them. If you're raising them, if you're going to be Broody Mama, are you going to let Broody Mama naturally like done thousands of years? Okay, Brad has, why do my hens stop laying eggs sometimes? I have 4 hens and only one of them has stopped laying. They give 3 eggs a day. And it used to be 4 eggs a day. I'm not complaining, as I live in a cold winter climate in Ontario. My hen got 16 hours of daylight and some sun, some artificial, and I feed them organic laying mash. The coop never gets below minus 7 degrees. Hey, let me tell you, you are lucky. There are a lot of people out there that wish they had 4 chickens in the middle of winter and getting 3 eggs a day. So it sounds like everything is fine. That is all natural. Sometimes chickens have to rest. They've been laying so much. They will go through a resting period, or they may not give you one every single day because they're going to rest. They're going to lay some more. Some stop. Could be the daylight. Could be the cold. Sometimes people don't light their coops in the wintertime because it takes to naturally rest that season. Some experts say they may lay longer if you allow them to rest over winter and not push and have them lay the time through the winter. So, Brad, I would consider yourself lucky. You're getting 4 hens. You're getting 3 eggs a day right now in the middle of winter up in Ontario, and it doesn't get below minus 7 degrees. I think you're a lucky person, and lots of people are right now that you're doing all of that. So I definitely wouldn't worry about that whatsoever. Stephanie asked, how cold is too cold for chickens? Now, those of you who listen to the show all the time on Facebook for a long time know what I would like to do, rant, but I will not. Stephanie asked, how cold is too cold for chickens? I only have 3. Now, that's the key. That's the important key. And the coop is a bit drafty. I do use a heat lamp. Wah, 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 wah. And a heat because there are only 3 cold is too cold. So, Stephanie, thank you very much for posting that on Facebook. And the issue here is I haven't seen a coop. I don't know anything about your coop. But a well-designed coop. Even in temperature should be fine. Even chickens. Now we stand at 3, pull back a little bit, and use the body heat right next to each other and warm, but we're doing the same thing. Think about the chickens on the end that only have one to cuddle with, or chickens kind of by themselves because they get picked on. So if your coop is well designed, then there should be a problem. You want to add it against heat lamps. They are dangerous. Every year, post 5:30 fires from heat not only burned down the coop, killed all the chickens, but have caught the people's house on fire, burned down their garage with their cars inside, done tens of thousands of dollars of damage, burnt their neighbor's house on fire, caught their neighbor's house on fire, did $4,000-$6,000 damage to their neighbor's house because they had a heat lamp that wasn't needed. Chickens have been around for thousands of years. They've been domesticated for over 6 years. Only had electricity America for about 125 years, and chickens have been doing just with the lamb coops for the seasons. Even the US West, if you go there, now they're actually hot out there. If you do not have no heat in there, they're designed to be fine with feathers. Like that. Even they advocate against heat lamps in your coops. So now it comes to me about your coop being wrapped. We do not want to wrap, do good ventilation. We don't do wrapping your coop in plastic and keeping air tight. That's one thing to do, because then moisture will build up. There's not good ventilation. That will cause the frost on the toes, on the legs, the comb, and on the wattles, is that moisture builds up, and then it gets below freezing, and then that causes frostbite. We'll talk about that, of course. How, like you heard on the chicken doctor talk. So you don't want to wrap it in plastic. You don't want to airtight. That's the wrong thing to do. You want good ventilation, but no drafts. You don't want that cold wind right across the roost while they're rooting there. But you want good ventilation. We're at more scale. We've had experts on the show talking about the difference between ventilation and drafts. Two different, totally different things. So, again, we have people post on our website. I live in Vermont. Wisconsin. I live in Alaska. It got down to negative 56 degrees. No heat in my coop. All my chickens are fine. We know this. It's not needed. But we don't argue with people that say, well, Andy, I'll feel comfortable and sleep better at night knowing my chickens are warm and toasty. That's fine. I wouldn't be able to sleep knowing that my house could burn to the ground because of 6 chickens that I want to kill with kindness by having a heat lamp there. So and your call, or maybe a couple things. Look at cedar heater. Look at those heaters. They're an infratherm, infrared heater, a lot safer than a heat lamp. We will never talk people out of using heat lamps across America because they're $12 at Walmart. Okay, we understand that. Okay, if you're going to use a heat lamp, which we advocate against, then for grown chickens anywhere, you know, okay, you need to have mini pickups. You need to clamp it. You need to pull it. You need to tape it. You need to chain it. All of those things. Just one of the things. So if the clamps, you have the duct tape. If the duct tape nails, you have a staple. If the staples, you have a chain. Have one of the rafters. So things have a baby clamp to fall into the shaving. Start the coop fire that will your hand be $100,000 lost because you wanted to feel comfortable but not knowing your sort of books. So one of those things. Inhalation is good, drafts are bad, and we do advocate here on this radio show. We have ever, in 05, this is our fifth broadcasting, and we'll ask them all, we have never had an expert, PhD, poultry scientist, lab scientist, professor, anybody, chicken expert, ever. American Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, nobody has ever come to the show advocating lamps in their groups, American Bantam Association, American Poultry Association. We've asked them all, okay, no heaters and coops. Nobody. We talked to breeders. Nobody has ever advocated for heat lamps on this radio show before, ever. I've asked all the experts on the show that this is getting up. Okay, so let's see if there's any more over here on Facebook. Let me refresh and then let me. In the last minutes, back over to the over chat room. Say there while we're there. I want to say a shout out to everybody listening live on the chat room. If you listen live, your place block the chat room. We appreciate you listening live. Sounds like we had the bad. Breaking up. There's not a show. And hey, don't forget, we can tune in Monday through Friday, p.m. Eastern Standard Time here, Backyard Poultry with Chicken Whisperer. So, sound on the head. Sound like we had a sound about the other show, but it's nothing best. And it worked for most of the show. So hey, thank you very much for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow right here at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Have a great day, everybody. Sorry about the last minute. Oh.